Good morning, everyone. We don't quite, do we have audio?
We do.
Yep.
I can
hear
us.
Okay, perfect. So good morning, goedemorgen, for anybody watching from the Netherlands.
You might have noticed that our network, if you've gone to Google, we're on Google Netherlands. And we thought that this might be just because we had the stroopwafels, but in fact it's because the knock here is funny. Anyway.
Yes.
So, you've got the clicker.
I have the clicker.
You have the clicker. Click.
So, I'm Chris Kubeka, and I like to call myself a fun-loving hacker because that's what I do. I like to have fun hacking. I also advise the UK government and the US government on protection of critical national infrastructure, so keeping the lights on, keeping the water going, keeping your public transport, your nuclear facilities up and running in case somebody very, very naughty wants to attack your country. However, part of that is making sure that the rest of the things work. That's why we're going to be discussing water.
And I'm Alicia Sterling, and I'm a very grumpy humanitarian hacker. I'm the executive director of Geeks Without Bounds. So Geeks Without Bounds supports humanitarian open source technology, software, hardware, any kind of technology, actually, that will help a humanitarian issue. Water, energy, medical, democratic engagement, disaster response, you name it. We run hackathons, and in 2015, we became the global caretakers for the Random Hacks of Kindness community. And so we run ROC events, the big global events every June and December, as well as lots of other subject-specific events throughout the year. And then we have an accelerator program that helps take the most promising projects out of those and helps them figure out how to become sustainable and deployable. And we go out into the field and make sure that things really work so that we're not being a bunch of stupid engineers just attempting to fix problems based on our fantasies of what's going on. So that's us. Oh, by the way, she didn't say this, but she's also on the board of directors of Geeks Without Bounds. So technically, she's my boss. I know.
Strange
Woe is me. So, water projects in low resource countries. So I can't actually see any of you with the lights in my eyes, but who here has donated money to help bring clean water to an African village? Yeah, a few people. And who has bought one of those charity waters, like Ethos Water?
I see some hands.
Yeah, I see a few hands. Yeah, so let me tell you. There, some of those charities are actually fantastic charities, and they are doing really important work. But what happens with that money is that money goes to drill brand new wells, to set up brand new plumbing, to bring water into either like a public square or into a schoolyard. And it's not like water going to the kitchen or water going to the bathroom. It's water going to a public water point, which might be one of those, hand pump things, or it might be a spigot. You'll see a picture of one of these in a little bit. But these are public water points. Now, here's the bad news, which I think is on the next one.
Yep.
So within 2 years, most of those water systems that have been set up will be broken. And once one of those water points is broken, it will take an average of 4 years to fix.
4 years to get a public water point.
Within Tanzania, at this moment, 60% of all public water points in the country are non-functional. They may be non-functional because they don't have a handle. They may be non-functional because somebody has destroyed the pipe further down the line. There are a number of reasons why it might be non-functional. But there is no money to fix things. This is the world of international aid. There's money to do new things, for new developments, for innovations, but there is no money for maintenance. In fact, the project that Geese Without Bounds is involved with in Tanzania got its grant to work on water infrastructure maintenance by calling it an innovation in water infrastructure maintenance. All right, so getting water to Tanzania. As you can see, there's a water point that's up in the
upper right.
Your right-hand corner. Sorry, I don't even know my right and my left because I'm dyslexic under normal circumstances. But anyway, so that water point, I don't know how well you can tell, but it's a non-functional water point. That is in front of a city hall. It should be the place where people can get their clean water. But there's no handle to turn it on. Now, directly behind that building, that city hall building, there's this field. And the larger picture that you see on your left is some children going to what amounts to a small pond behind City Hall that has water. This was during the rainy season, so that pond has water. In the dry season, it will not have water, so the children will have to walk even farther to get water. The pond is not a clean, protected water source. And it has sediment in it, it has bacteria in it, God knows what else it has in it. I didn't personally test it while I was there. But I'd like to tell you just a little story that happened at one of the workshops that I was at. In fact, this was a workshop that happened at that town, but it is not a story about that town. So we had a workshop to teach people how to use this new system that was developed at one of our hackathons called Taarifa. Excuse me, Taarifa. And the idea behind this is that a citizen has a cell phone. Everybody has cell phones. They use cell phones for their banking, for paying for things. So if you see a broken water point like that one up there, you can send a message using USSD, which is basically the same protocol that WAP goes over. You send a message and you say, this water point is broken. It says, which water point is broken? And it gives you options, and then you pick the number for the water point, and then it says, how is it broken? Is it muddy water? Is it not working at all? What's the thing? So you answer the questions. And then after this little session that goes back and forth, it says, thank you very much for your report. Yay. And then that goes into a database system that allows the community-organized water service organizations and the district water engineers to see what's happening, what's broken, what's fixed. They can send people out. They can track how long it takes to get things fixed. So we were having this workshop to teach the people how to use this tool. And we had a lull in the workshop, so I asked for stories. What happens when your water point is broken? And there were a bunch of people that stood up and, you know, explained things. And one of the gentlemen stood up and he said, well, we really don't have any problem. We don't need public water points that much because we live right next to Lake Victoria. So we have lots of clean water available to us. The only problem is that every so often somebody gets eaten by a crocodile.
Every so often, you know.
We don't need a public water point. So, I mean, I came away from that just feeling absolutely shocked that it was so difficult to deal with the bureaucracy of getting your water point fixed and maintained that people would prefer to, you know, sacrifice a few random people to the crocodiles in the need to get their water. So we'd just like to take a moment to talk about sewer systems. Do you want to?
This is a sewer system in Tanzania, and funny enough, the World Bank thinks that open sewage systems are an acceptable thing to fund, but yet not biodigesters and certain other maintenance on infrastructure. And as you can tell, anytime you have an open sewage system like this, there is a bunch of nastiness that is going to occur. And there are really a lot of people that die because of the unclean water. There's even blindness, parasites. It's all the nasty stuff that you never wanted to think about ever in your life. Yes.
Also, that these open sewers, it's untreated water. It goes back into river systems that then goes back into the water that people are picking up, right? So remember, the 60% of people who should have access to clean water who don't, plus all of the people who just don't have access to clean water, they're going to get their water from whatever water source is handy. If there's a river and the water doesn't look absolutely disgusting, they're getting that water. And you would be surprised at how not disgusting sewer waters rushing down basically a stream in the middle of the town can look. I mean, it might smell bad, but it doesn't necessarily look bad.
No.
And people do get their water from those.
Yeah. It also enters the agriculture and also the food supply hitting that and if they fish or anything like that. So it just spreads the pain around.
So luckily, this is only a problem in Africa, right?
Absolutely. Only a problem in Africa. It would never happen in a developed nation like the United States.
Definitely not in New York.
Definitely not New York. No. Mm-mm. So where were those pictures taken?
Oh, those pictures?
Yeah.
Okay, so the one on their left, that's Zanzibar. And that's actually rainwater right after a rainstorm. And there was this little boy dancing in the puddles. But the one on your right, that's New York. It kind of looks like an open sewer system in Tanzania.
Yes, it does, with mysterious contents that you don't want to step in. Yes.
But here's the interesting thing, because you think that that's just normal. It's kind of what happens in the city, that water runoff. What happens to that water?
That water, when it's actually collected for the runoff, actually gets put back into the water supply so that it can then be filtered out with reservoir water and also river water, wherever the New York water supply gets it. They actually have several reservoirs. But it actually gets fed back into the water system. So eventually, if you are drinking anything from back there, or any of the water in the water fountains, or taking a shower, that will eventually end up back into the water system while you're staying in this wonderful, lovely city of New York. So I think some of you may have heard the news about Flint, Michigan. And Flint, Michigan is a very interesting one because, believe it or not, it's not a unique situation in the United States. However, it's just one circumstance where it's really been picked up on the news because it is just such a horrendous situation. Basically, to save some money, the municipality decided they were going to switch the water supply from Lake Huron to the Flint River. Now, not all water is created equally. When you change the water source, there's going to be different pH balances. There's going to be additional sediment or so forth. Now, one of the problems that compounds this is the United States decided to keep lead legal until the 1970s, while the rest of the world in the 1920s said this is a dangerous material. We won't put it in our gasoline products. We won't put it in our indoor plumbing, and we won't be putting it in our medication. But the U.S., for commercial reasons or corruption, decided to keep it legal, including in paint and gasoline and indoor plumbing until the early 1970s. Now, when you send unconditioned water through pipes that can have lead, you have to actually add some chemicals so that the lead does not get leached from the pipes. Well, when they switched the water source, they decided not to bother with that additional water conditioning to further save some more money. And unfortunately, you cannot get rid of lead out of your body. It's a heavy metal. It's very difficult. And, if you live in a poor neighborhood and can't afford lovely, expensive bottled water, which, by the way, usually is not tested in the United States, you are stuck with mysterious water of unknown, dubious quality. To tell you how unknown and dubious it is, Flint, Michigan, with their required water report, still does not list the lead issue officially, even as of last year.
So this is an actually important thing to note. we have some major corruption and trust issues in the United States. And when people get upset about anti-science folk in general, or even conspiracy theorist folk in general, I always kind of feel like I have to stop them, because I actually have a lot of compassion for the most bizarre conspiracy theorists and the most anti-science people. Not that I agree with them, but that I have compassion for them, because there are so many cases where people who know better are lying to the public. So if you know you've been lied to, not once but several times, why the hell would you keep trusting these people who are saying things you don't understand, right? So Flint is not even, still in their public reports, not talking about the lead, even though it's totally public knowledge now. Yeah. So what about the small town that I live in eastern Washington, where we've had weird situations with everybody on a single street getting breast cancer in the same year, and we had three babies born with encephalitis in the course of a year and a half. What is going on with our water? Who knows? Because the reports say they're perfect. I won't drink that stuff.
Yeah. So it was known pretty early on after the switch from the water sources that General Motors complained and said, what's going on with the water? Because it's actually corroding our metal parts in our factory. So even though they were trying to save money, the municipality, they gave GM a free gift of $400,000 for a super-duper water filtration system as a gift, remember, just for General Motors. Now, a local hospital had raised concerns because they had several patients die of something called Legionella. It's a form of pneumonia. And they had complained to the city and said, we think that there might be something wrong with the water. And they said, well, you're going to have to fix it yourself. So the hospital had to fix it to the tune of seven figures to fix the water and to ensure that it was actually disinfected before it got to their patients.
Right. So the GM factory actually got even better than just filtration. They actually got that Detroit water. They got their own pipeline of the good Detroit water from Lake Huron, as opposed to everybody else. And the hospital where people were dying had to put in their own filtration system. I mean, the entire value system is completely messed up. Just to make you even a little bit more angry, as part of the work with Geeks Without Bounds, I've been talking to some people who are doing work on the ground in Flint. And part of what they're doing is bringing bottled water from safer places to the people of Flint. If you want to distribute bottled water in Flint, you're supposed to do it at one of the designated water distribution locations. And you have to, A, trust that when you drop water off at one of these designated locations that it's going to be distributed, and B, anybody in the city who wants to go get this water that's being distributed has to go down as if they're begging for charity to one of these water distribution locations. So this group of people who's doing this work said, no, we're not doing that. We're just going to give water directly to people, and we don't care. But here's another part of that, is that when this was all big in the news, they had hundreds of distribution locations. They've closed most of them down, and now it's in the tens. So there's that. Also, the town of Flint is actually sitting on top of an aquifer with perfectly good, clean water. It's actually the same water from Lake Huron, and it doesn't have the problems that the Flint River water has. It's basically filtered by the ground a bit better. Now, it's entirely possible to have groundwater that is very poisonous, but this water has been tested, and a number of the homes really should be able to use their own well water, right? But Flint, 2 years ago, stopped permitting people to drill their own wells. You cannot get a permit presently to drill a well in Flint, even if you've tested the groundwater at your home and proven that it is clean. So there are people who are saying, we don't care. We're going to do it anyway because we've got to do something for these people. It's a very desperate situation, and the bureaucracy and mess that has been created because of corruption and greed.
It's very frustrating. Extremely frustrating. So, it's not flipping.
It's not flicking because I'm...
So, basically, they went out and said, you know, we're going to save $5 million switching. $5 million. That sounds like, you know, right? $5 million, that's a pretty good savings. However, so far, it's looking like with various grants and bailouts and so forth, it's already costing $600 million to fix that $5 million savings. Now, when we look at this, I live in the Netherlands. I've lived there for about 10 years, and I live in the capital city of Amsterdam. And about 11 years ago, the city itself bought a state-of-the-art biodigester garbage waste facility and water facility for the tune of €450 million. It's owned by the city. It's already been paid off, and we make a profit of $12 million every year. We've got the best-rated water source of any developed country in the world. We test for more things than you can possibly imagine to make sure. And our water is very, very filtered. It also provides 75% of the electricity for the entire city. It keeps those red lights on. It keeps our metro system and what we would call trams, which are all electric, as well as most of the buses. And the money gets put back into the city so that it can stay dynamic. And about 20% of the city actually gets free heat from the electric production because it comes out as steam. So we actually have very, very beautiful water for less money than it's costing, basically, Flint to make up for this wonderful little switchover disaster. So when people say, well, what can we do to solve this? Well, we've already had things in different parts of the world that are working and are very, very successful.
So when it comes to government, if you have the will and you don't have the corruption, it's absolutely possible to do these things.
So this is a map of the United States, and what it's showing is problematic water areas. And I don't know if you can see the map where it shows pretty much a kind of a darkish red in the New York, New Jersey area. Very recently, several individuals have actually resigned from New Jersey because they were not testing the water supply even in the school systems, and they're finding that there's up to 5 parts per billion lead coming out of the water fountains in your children's elementary school, because they decided to selectively and manipulatively test the water in only certain areas, or they'll do little tricks like trying to flush out the water from the pipes for a while before they actually test for lead, which is actually completely illegitimate testing-wise. The United States is got some problems. There's even worse problems than Flint in the Washington, D.C. area. So you can look up the Washington, D.C. water crisis that was 2000, 2002, somewhere around there, where they still have an issue and they still have yet to fix it. And that's basically what it looks like. Some of the more common problems are this. We've got lead, but there's also other things and other heavy metals like copper, which can have devastating effects on the human body. Bacteria. Well, that's just a nasty one. I'm sure many of you have heard of something called cholera, and of course, other things like Legionella.
By the way, we do have chlorine in our water, and that's supposed to kill off the bacteria, but it doesn't kill off all of the bacteria. No. And some areas put in less chlorine, so you're going to have a higher chance of having the bacteria. Yeah. You've also got bacteria that are just becoming essentially immune to the alcohol and the chlorine and the antibiotics and everything else.
Yeah.
And so that creates more of a problem. So in some cities, they've put even more chlorine into their water. So then the water coming out of your spigot kind of smells like a swimming pool. And that's not very good for you either.
No. And by the way, we do not use chlorine in our water system in the Netherlands because we don't have to. It comes in through pure and clean. Another thing that there's a problem with, in the United States, there are absolutely no regulations to filter the water enough to remove the pharmaceutical waste products out of it. So when you take chemotherapy drugs, it can actually still stay in your body for up to 10 years. So you're still peeing out some of those chemo drugs, as well as birth control or cocaine or ecstasy or whatever, because there's no federal requirement to filter the water out that much. It ends back up into your water system.
In Washington State, they've been testing the fish in the Columbia River, and they're finding cocaine, they're finding chemo drugs, they're finding all sorts of interesting drugs. So many of these drugs that we take don't actually get metabolized by our body, so it's just going straight into the water system, and then after it's treated by our sewer systems, incompletely, it's going straight into the fish. So it's not only just the water that you're drinking. If you're eating fish, or especially even worse, shellfish, you're getting all of those contaminants again.
Oh, and how about the fruits and vegetables and where the water comes from that actually irrigates those? It's the same sources going back into your food supply, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, so, you know, what you end up with is these pretty rivers. It looks so clean, right? No, fuck that. So this is close to where I live. I don't expect you to read all of it. I put this is up on the web. I'll give you the address for it at the very end. But you can look up the link to this. The Snake River in Washington and Idaho is the source for industrial water, the source for agricultural water, and the source for drinking water for a pretty large population, mostly rural. But, you know, I mean, even those of us who live in rural areas, we're human and we count too. And our water is horribly poisoned by industrial runoff, by the agricultural runoff, from the poop from the cows in the feedlots. It's pretty awful. So, yeah, that sucks. What do we do about it?
We've got to do something about it because all of us need water. Yeah, that's one of those things.
And so that's why we're here, because we hack all the things. Yes, so we have water hackathons that are actually coming up. So this is super exciting to me. I just want to give, like, a short tangent. So the Random Hacks of Kindness community is this global community. It was started by other people. I had nothing to do with it when it first started. There was a consortium of organizations: NASA, World Bank, Google. Who else was involved with it right at the beginning? Microsoft was involved with it in the beginning, and there was another organization called Second Muse that was the global coordinator for this, and all these companies were funding it, and there were events every June and every December, and it was great. And then I guess the companies kind of got bored, whatever. They stopped funding it. Second Muse said, we're, you know, a for-profit company. We can't really do something without money coming in. That we have no contract. We're not doing this anymore. So they just went, okay, somebody else has to take this over. So in October of 2014... I said, well, Geeks Without Bounds runs hackathons, and we've probably run more nonprofit hackathons than anybody else on the planet. Why don't we take it over? And they said, great, you do that. So we inherited ROC Global Coordination with no budget and literally a database and some files and a broken website, and here, go do it. But on the plus side, we had this amazing global community that already existed. And the Indian community, in particular, stepped up in a massive way. And the one of the founders of Rock India, Chinmayee SK, she actually came on board with Geeks Without Bounds to become the global coordinator for Rock, and works with Rock Australia and Rock Africa and all of the different cities throughout Europe and the United States in order to coordinate both the global days and specific subject events. And she asked me to come to India to run a gender-based violence hackathon, or rather a hackathon against gender-based violence in India.
Not the other way, really.
Right.
Not the other
way. Yeah. Woo. So she invited me to come to India, and this program was funded by the U.S. State Department, and we thought we were going to run this in Kolkata, but the U.S. consulate in Kolkata said, no, we want to run this in rural India. We're going to run this in Ranchi. And we're like, wait a second, doesn't the community in Ranchi have kind of trouble getting access to computers? They're like, yeah, that's why we want to run a hackathon there. We're like, aren't we going to have trouble finding people who know how to program? Yeah, that's why we want to run a hackathon there. So we kind of, you know, wrung our hands and worried a lot. Chinmayee did an amazing job of coordinating locals there in Ranchi, students from the local business college. She got the Judicial Academy on board. She got professionals from the area on board. She got people from charities, from NGOs that deal with gender-based violence and with youth issues from around India. She brought them to Ranchi. And she also managed to get volunteers who were professional programmers or college students in areas that had much more access to actually travel all the way to Ranchi to take part, to serve as participants, as mentors, as subject matter experts. And let me tell you, it was one of the best hackathons I have ever been to, hands down. It was frickin' amazing. So we go away, and a couple weeks after I leave Ranchi, they say, we want to have a rock community here. We want to do global events, global weekend events here. And we said, great, have at it. And so they started organizing for that. And then they said, you know what? We have issues with water. We want to have a water hackathon too. Well, wait, I mean, you want to do more than just the twice a year event? Yeah. We want to organize a water hackathon. So after, we were like, okay, we'll help you with that. We'll help define the funding for that. And while Chinmayee was looking and coordinating for funding, another city in rural India said, we want to do this too. So now we've got two cities in India and possibly more. So I'm very excited about the fact that that has taken root and grown. And now what we'd like to do is we'd like to do a simultaneous event, sort of like we do on the global weekends. But this one will be India and the United States. We will have at least two locations in India and at least two locations in the United States. I'm hoping that we'll have one location in either Detroit or even Flint, because Flint would be like having it in Ranchi, trust me. and the other thing that I would really like to do, because this is something that's very close to my heart, living very close to a res as I do, and having two of my three children being half-blooded Central American Indians, I would like to do something to help water quality on Native American reservations. So I would really like to have one of our locations in the United States actually be on a reservation where we're not coming in and telling them how to fix their problem, but just like what happened in Ranchi, we're simply bringing in some support and letting them make the decision about how they want to fix this and telling us, the technology community, what it is they want us to do for them to meet their challenges. So as you see, this is sort of the new, it's not really a tagline, it's sort of a motto, above and beyond the rock tagline, which is collaboration is greater than competition. When we run hackathons, it's not about who can make the flashiest thing. It's not about who makes the, you know, like, oh yeah, you want to make the judges really happy so that you can get whatever the big prize is. This is a charity event that you're doing for the point of solving real issues. And it's not about whether you win or lose. It's about whether, as a group, we're able to actually come up with things that will help humans or help the environment or help whatever we need to help. So that's what this is about. And I can't see the bottom one over there.
Our hackathon model.
Oh, yeah. That's what I just told you about. Yep. Whew, that's good that I covered everything on the screen. So, and this is also important, beyond the hackathon. So if you are familiar with hackathons, you probably know that most things that are developed at hackathons die at hackathons. They might actually get a little bit of work a few weeks after the hackathon, but the vast majority of things that get invented or prototyped at a hackathon end there. But part of our model for hackathons is that we make sure that the most promising projects have support to become sustainable organizations. We also make sure that projects that already exist that fit these humanitarian ideals can go from one hackathon to another as a way to gain volunteer time from strangers, right? People who don't know about your project yet, and that helps to grow your volunteer base and grow your open source community. And it also helps to inject new thinking. So our project acceleration includes a curriculum that covers sustainability. What kind of an organization are you going to be? Are you going to be for-profit, non-profit? Can you be collaborative? Can you be a co-op? What sorts of legal containers do you need? And that has a lot to do with what country you're in, what state you're in, and a lot of other issues. We have legal mentorship that comes in and speaks to our accelerator program members. We talk about developing your open source community and work with you to connect with more people. We work on co-design. Every single project, whether it's about water, whether it's about disaster response, whether it's about gender-based violence, it doesn't matter. It needs to actually serve the people it's supposed to serve. It's not good enough for you to come in and think like, yeah, I can fix this problem. You've got to talk to the subject matter experts and the end users from day one. That's why we bring subject matter experts and end users even to our hackathons. And we encourage people who have no technical skill whatsoever but are just curious to show up to our hackathons, because those people, when they get engaged in the process, can be really, really vital. And then, of course, we also have mentorships as part of the curriculum on privacy and security. There's a whole nother area, a whole nother talk, actually, that I won't go into about one of the ROC programs called ROCSEC, where we actually do code audits on open source humanitarian projects and send back bug reports about things that can be done to make the code more secure. And we also have services to help not-for-profit organizations, small and medium-sized not-for-profit organizations that can't afford a proper pen test. But that's not the code review is part of the project acceleration. And also help from ladies like her. All right, so the core of sustainability. Social enterprise turned into two things. It was actually supposed to be one thing. Social enterprises, cooperatives, commons resources, and replicability. Your project is not sustainable if you have a patent or closed source, and when you get bored with it, it dies. Or you personally run out of money, and somebody else can't pick it up. Or you can only do this in the United States. Nobody else can do it anywhere else because you're holding on to the IP. None of those things is really sustainable in the long term, because there's all sorts of things that can stop you from moving forward. Cooperatives are highly sustainable ways of running business, because if you've got a good governance model within a cooperative, it will keep you focused on the purpose for what you're doing this. That it's not just about making millions of dollars for a couple of people at the top, but it's actually about this larger end goal. And replicability is really important, because if I solve a problem in Flint, I'd like to be able to take that resource and replicate it in, say, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, or replicate that in
Everglades City, Florida.
Yes.
Anywhere.
Or Coban, Guatemala.
They're about the same water systems. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to remind you that in our current version of capitalism, money values money. Well, actually, not just in our current, whatever. Money values money. Money only cares about money. Money doesn't care about humans. If what you're focusing on is profitability, then all you care about is how much money you're bringing in. So a social enterprise is different from a pure for-profit enterprise in the sense that its primary value is a social issue rather than its primary value being making the most money for the shareholders. Excuse me. And some people think that if you have a social enterprise that somehow you can't make money or you can't make enough to pay people a living wage, and that is absolutely not true. And a good social enterprise or a good co-op or whatever the peer-to-peer model or whatever you have, a good organization that's going to be sustainable must pay a decent wage to all of the people that are working on it, because if you're not, then you're sacrificing people. Don't sacrifice people. That's just creating more problems. All right. So what we've accomplished so far, specifically in water. Now, actually, these are all things that we've touched within the last 2 years since I became executive director. I actually became executive director of Geeks Without Bounds a couple of weeks before the last Hope. And I was here at the last Hope with the previous executive director, Willow Brew. So Willow actually worked on some additional projects, but she's taken those projects on with her. So here I'm focusing specifically on the projects that we've continued to be involved with over the last 2 years. Tarifa, I was telling you about earlier, that started at a water hackathon that Willow Brew ran as part of Geeks Without Bounds back in 2010 in London. 3 months after its first prototype version at that hackathon, it was running the water system for Uganda. And it ran the water system for Uganda for 2 years. Then we went back to the drawing board. We did a bunch of new things, and it was first deployed in Tanzania under the same group of people that launched it at that hackathon. There's also another fork that's being used in Ghana. And we've been looking at using other forks of Tarifa with some slight differences in connection with CanoeNet. So CanoeNet is this project with the Kofan community in the Amazon jungle. They have about 1 million acres of Amazon land. And oil companies keep you know, polluting their land and groundwater and their rivers, and it's pretty nasty. And when we first started communicating with them, it was all about water quality issues. That's kind of grown. The project around that has grown to touch educational issues and bringing in power that's sustainable and doesn't involve the petroleum companies and things like that. But the water quality issue is still key to that. And then this other project called Aguas con tus Aguas, which is a project from Guatemala that basically it has two pieces. One is a piece that allows the public to test water themselves with these testing kits and then track what the quality of the water where they are is. And the other piece of it is sort of a water education piece that tells the general community, this is what's going on with your water. Maybe this water that you didn't trust is much cleaner than you thought, and maybe this water that you did trust is much worse than you thought. So that's a really neat project. I think that each of these projects inform each other and have a lot to bring to the table in terms of helping us think about some of these other problems that we've been talking about today. But I think that we can do a whole lot more. So what do we want to do now?
Take over the world, of course.
All right.
So trying to use technology responsible. It's one of these things where, you know, patents and IP and so forth, but we're dealing with human beings that need water. You don't want to have to pay for a license before you fill up your cup right there and then sign an NDA to make sure that they know that you'll never test it yourself to tell the results. We want to be able to spread that knowledge of open source ways, low cost, no cost ways that we can actually make this stuff better. Because I think all of you would like to know what you're drinking today. I know when I read the New York City water quality report yesterday, I won't drink any water in this city now again. And
but the coffee that's made from that, never mind.
Yeah, you know, damn it. It's called Hackers Gotta Have Caffeine, man. Hackers Gotta Have Caffeine. And if we know that there are problems, we can do something about it, and we can pressure our local governments to say, listen, why aren't we testing for, you know, materials that are used for uranium enrichment? We can get things changed, but we need to know about it. And by the way, one last thing to add, if you are ever curious about your water quality, either from your local government or if you have well water, it only costs about $30 to pick up what's called a water safe kit, which will test lead, copper, nitrates, bacteria, and a couple of other key things so that you can take that information and go, hey, you know, do I need to buy a filter, or is it time to take that job someplace else?
So I know this is probably the wrong audience to be giving our Facebook to, but yeah, we do have Facebook, and we're also on Twitter, as you can see. If you'd like to get involved, we have a lot of volunteering opportunities. We've got longer-term volunteer opportunities. Internships can be anywhere from a summer to a year long. Because of our ethics, we although we generally start people as interns, as unpaid interns for the first couple of months, we work with you right from the start to try to figure out how to fund you after that. You can also volunteer as a mentor in our accelerator program. Basically, you give about 3 hours of your time to a project, and if you like the project, you can give more time with them. And we do that over the internet, so over Skype or Google Hangouts, so it doesn't matter where you are. You can run a hackathon, a global event, or one of the other subject-specific events. Check out the ROC website to find out how to get a license to do that. And if you've got a great project and you think that it could use the support of the accelerator program, please do apply. I would love it if you sign up for our newsletter. If you go to our website at guab.org, You'll see the place to sign up for our newsletter. That's where you'll be able to find out more details about the upcoming water hackathons, and you'll also have more ways to contact us and get involved. And another thing that you can do, which would be really, really awesome, is to donate, because we don't have, you know, huge grants. We tend to have smallish grants from companies or from government to work on a specific project. The time that we spend tying the pieces together is generally not funded. And we have a huge, huge,
huge,
huge, huge budget of less than $100,000 a year for three full-time people.
And all the projects.
And all of the flights between different countries and all of the everything else, which means that most of the time my flights end up coming out of my own pocket. So your help goes actually a really long way. More importantly, come to a hackathon. Hack on things. Yes. Because we really need to make this better. By the way, we took one of those pictures today. Do you see that? Do you see that manhole cover? Do you see that manhole cover? Made in India. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Did we have any? I don't think we have time for questions.
We have
please 2 minutes.
Please
use the microphone if you've got questions.
And just ask if it's for Worried Monkey or not.
It is not for Worried Monkey. Thank you very much. I got here a little bit late, so I may have missed if you talked about this, but I was really glad that you mentioned co-design, and I was wondering if you haven't done it already, if you could talk to the audience a little bit more about what that looks like when you put it in practice.
So what that looks like, I mean, it could take a long time to discuss that in great detail, but basically what I said already about bringing the end users, the subject matter experts, and the technologists together in the room from the very, very start. As soon as you realize you have a challenge, let's say you're talking about gender-based violence, right? So we brought together people who had been survivors of gender-based violence, together with people who were therapists or psychologists, and the technologists all in one place to work on the problems together. So, yeah, I'd love to talk more about it, but let me take another question.
When you're traveling in a place where the water quality is suspect and you don't know, what do you drink?
Beer's personally
good. Yes, I heard that.
Yeah, actually,
beer's actually a cleaner.
Beer is good. My son is a winemaker, and one of the things that he told me is that as long as it's got 1% alcohol, it's going to kill all the things. So sometimes I take my son's advice, and I just mix alcohol into things, like, you know, beer or wine. Some of the places I go, that's not possible. I do boil water a lot.
And I also carry, a life straw. I also carry water purification tablets as well.
Yeah.
So I carry a kit because you just never know.
It depends on where I am, but I boil water a lot, and I have one of those Brita filter, you know, the water bottles with the Brita filter. So boil first, filter second.
Yeah.
Okay, you have time for me? Awesome. Okay, I was under this conception, right, that all New York water is clean simply because it filters up from Canada and it goes down into the Atlantic.
No.
I looked this up on Google. I can swear this is true. And I was under the assumption that was absolutely true. New York water comes up from Canada, from upstate New York, goes through the city, and goes out through the bottom. So it's all clean.
It's totally clean until it gets into America. No.
There's Bronx in the middle.
Yeah.
So there are actually a lot of different sources, even in Canada, you know, not to be too, what's the word, annoying
Biased.
About it?
Yeah.
There are a lot of different points within that where the word pollution comes mm-hmm. in. So, yeah, it really isn't perfect water.
No.
And that water, like we were saying, the water that gets cycled back into the system, that's more of where your problem is coming from. Like, you might have perfect glacial water, and then you're cycling that water from the the street right back into it.
Yeah, also New York City, their water quality report, they rate that if at least 90% of their water passes, they don't count the other 10%.
Okay, so
Time.
Yes, I just want to give you one thing real quick. Our presentation, if you'd like to see it, is at bit.ly/HOPE4Water. Okay, hope for water.
Where do you get the $30 water test kits?
You can get them straight from Amazon, actually.
Cool.
Yep. And with Amazon Prime, they'll deliver it the same day in New York City.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.